Radio Catskill.
From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. Thank you so much for being here with us this evening. I'm your host, Jason Dole. But not for long. I'm about to hand things over to Bill Williams, because it's time once again for the Kingfisher Project, Information Against Addiction, only here on Radio Catskill's local edition.
Welcome to the Kingfisher Project, information and awareness about the heroin and opiate epidemic. I'm Julie Pizzol. The Kingfisher Project began in memory of my daughter, Rebecca Jean Pizzol, who was shot and killed due to her heroin addiction. At her memorial service, her former teacher, Mr. Okazalik, read an essay she wrote. It was about a bird, an injured kingfisher bird that she found and rescued when everyone else had given up on the bird. In that spirit, our community came together and formed the Kingfisher Project. Since 2014, we have been raising awareness about the drug and opiate crisis in our listening area and around the country, right here on Radio Catskill. Here is Bill Williams.
My guest today is Camille O'Brien. Camille is the new Crisis Service Coordinator at the Department of Community Services for Sullivan County.
Thanks for having me, Bill. Always great to be here.
A year ago, we talked a year ago, and at that point you were the Drug Task Force Coordinator for Community Services for Sullivan County.
Yep, I just made the switch about 2 weeks ago.
And what is the difference?
So the Drug Task Force Coordinator coordinates all the pillars from prevention, the jail, police stations, treatment programs, and kind of oversees all of them. This new role with Crisis Services Coordinator, I'm going to get a little more, let me not be brusque, in the mud with it, that there's a lot of on-the-ground work to be had. And we're just trying to figure out how to make it happen. These are new services in Sullivan County. They're newer services in the world of mental health and substance use. So we're seeing what everybody else is doing. And the main thing I'm focusing on first. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, is the crisis intervention team is the in the moment who shows up and how it runs if somebody's having a mental health crisis. Because classically it's been police or EMS or both, sometimes fire. It's been a very first responder forward, which we love our first responders. But that's a lot of excitement. It's a lot of attention. And sometimes it isn't comforting to the person going through it, and it tends to exacerbate the situation. So we're looking at alternatives. Sometimes that'll still include a member of law enforcement or a member of EMS, but it'll also include a mental health professional or a peer or somebody that can ease the situation.
Do you have enough people available to cover this?
We hope so. So we have a lot of programs that come close to doing this. So when I took this position a couple weeks ago, it's been a lot of seeing what everybody else does and using what we already have. We don't need to build a whole new team. But we have Hope Not Handcuffs. We have our outreach teams like SALT or SOS. We have our quick response team in the law enforcement that respond 24 to 72 hours after overdose. We have a lot of team members that are on the periphery. So right now I've just been having meetings with all of them, including EMS and police, to see how we can approach this together.
Does it fall to you to organize all this?
Yeah, that's the job I took, and I'm excited to take it on.
Wow.
Yeah, it's great people doing great work, and it's just adding this one piece that seems to be missing.
So part of your job is to get buy-in on the reorganization or the restructuring of all this.
Absolutely. And, some programs, it's asking them to do just a little bit more or change the way they're doing things. But they have to be on board too.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to make anything harder on anybody. Some of these organizations are for profit. Some are volunteer. We want to stay within everybody's mission. But we also just want to help people that are going through something.
Where did the impetus for this come from?
It's been happening around the state, and you know, it was just our turn here, and some things came down to the state with opioid settlement funds. It was another initiative. I want to say it was the Department of Health. I don't get into the nitty gritty of the numbers and the higher ups.
Right.
I like to be on the ground doing this. But the idea came down, and I said, I think I would really like to do that. And they said, you know, they told me it would be a new position. You would no longer be the drug task force coordinator. And while I did love that job and I loved what I did with that job, this is something that I really think I can make a difference. And I think I'd just be good at.
Well, I would think your drug task force work would certainly be good preparation for this. It's not like they're disconnected.
Absolutely. Well, and that's the beauty of it. Working with the drug task force, so many times, even in state agencies, substance use and mental health are kept separately, but they're so intertwined. And, you know, substance use almost never exists without some sort of, whether it's a temporarily inflicted trauma response, or it's a more long-term situation, there's generally a mental health need behind most substance use. So yeah, coordinating the drug task force, we saw that a lot. So it is great preparation and is what made me so curious about this and let me know how much it is needed.
Was the HEAL initiative, did that have anything to do with help?
The HEAL initiative, so that was actually my first job with the county, was I was the coordinator for the Healing Community Study, which led into the drug task force. But the Healing Community Study through Columbia University, that was a big influx of grant money specifically towards bringing down opioid overdose deaths. So that was really focused on opioids and fentanyl. As I shifted into the drug task force, we looked at drugs and substances as a whole. So not just opioids, you know, cocaine is another one. It's not an opioid, but it's prevalent. It's here. Meth. We shifted from just opioids because opioid was the hot button item. And it's also where a lot of money was coming in from with the settlement funds. But as the numbers came in from EMS and also the emergency departments, alcohol is huge.
And of course.
Yeah. And it's one of the biggest ones. It's also known as, and any law enforcement or security guards or bouncers at bars know this, it's the most aggressive substance out there. So being a depressant, alcohol is also very entangled in substance use itself. I personally don't drink anymore. And when I took on the initiative personally to stop drinking, it had a lot to do with grief, losing both my parents. And counselors identified that. And, you know, I had sessions looking into that. And it's something that really did help me. And it helped me quit not just using the substance, but needing any substance. So, yeah.
You mentioned it, and I think people are sometimes aware, but not, that substance use goes in waves. It's not, you know, be one substance. I mean, heroin, my son, as you know, died of a heroin overdose.
Yeah.
That's almost archaic now.
Heroin, you know, being in the rooms and hearing from other people, when xylazine first came around a couple years ago, being in the rooms enough, I have relationships with a lot of the people in there. And when I have questions about certain things, sometimes somebody that I know will know about it, I'll ask. And there was this one fella that I was asking about xylazine. And he told me that in order to find real heroin, it's nearly impossible. And he named one spot in the city where maybe you can find it now. But he said, everything is fentanyl. Fentanyl and xylazine. And he explained to me what xylazine was. For anybody that doesn't know, xylazine is a horse tranquilizer that's added in to fentanyl to make it a more synthetic heroin. Because fentanyl came on the scene, it's much cheaper. The profit margins are much higher, but it's a quicker up and down high. What he explained to me is when they add in the xylazine, which is a tranquilizer and not an opioid, so it's resistant to Narcan, which makes it more dangerous. The xylazine extends the high to make the fentanyl and xylazine mixture a more synthetic heroin because it extends the high.
Got it.
Yeah.
Although the dealers don't want to extend the high too long because they want to sell as many doses as they can.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a money game. And, you know, a lot of these dealers would never touch this stuff. It's purely money. And, you know, that's where, as much as I would like to say that drug dealers aren't smart, they are. They're making a lot of money. It's just that they don't care. And that's where having a heart and morality comes into play.
Well, they need to be smart if they want to stay out of jail.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and that's why a lot of times they put people that have addictions in the position to get in trouble in place of themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they use people's addictions against them, which is sad.
What is most frequently found in Sullivan County right now?
Right now, we've been hearing a lot more about cocaine and meth. Fentanyl has been found in just about everything, whether it's cocaine, meth, crack has been coming back. A lot of times there's fentanyl mixed into whatever it is. So there's been a lot of mixtures. We are still seeing fentanyl. Everybody has their choices. When fentanyl started to get mixed into things, some people have become addicted to fentanyl itself. We're going to have a pillar lead meeting with the drug task force next week, and that's usually when we get our updates. But as of a month ago, we were hearing a lot about crack and cocaine and meth.
Well, now, for a long time, there was a study out of that study a while back now.
Yeah.
The diseases of despair, drugs, depression, suicide.
Absolutely. All intertwined. And that's where, you know, as the drugs change. So let's back up. A lot of people came together for the opioid crisis and to talk about the dangers of heroin, of opioids, of fentanyl. And I think everybody did a fairly good job because less people are going to those drugs. They've just chosen different drugs because they're still struggling with those same internal issues that got them to get into drugs in the first place. And that's where, again, the mental health issues are intertwined. A lot of times that does result in people taking their own lives.
Well, now, you mentioned alcohol before. Do you think that's the most prevalent depression?
In the overall scheme of substances used by people in our county and in our country, yeah, alcohol. It's so widely accepted, and people don't talk enough about the dangers of alcohol, not just drinking and driving, but what it does to your entire body, mind, everything.
Yeah.
And I don't like to tell anybody what to do, but I just would like people to just know the dangers and what it does to you.
I'm Bill Williams, and I'm talking with Camille O'Brien right here on the Kingfisher Project. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
The president didn't just say wrong. He said rigged. He said these numbers were rigged out of political bias against him. And there's absolutely no evidence for that. But I think that suggestion by the president is what has so many people so alarmed right now.
I'm Natalie Kitroev. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
You're listening to the Kingfisher Project on the Local Edition. I'm your host, Bill Williams. And I'm talking with Camille O'Brien, the Crisis Services Coordinator for the Department of Community Services for Sullivan County. We haven't even mentioned the other drug. We haven't even mentioned tobacco.
Does
that fall under your purview or not?
It does. I struggle with that myself. This Lent, I put down cigarettes and I haven't picked them back up again. But there's a coalition throughout the county with a lot of partners recently working on preventing underage vaping. Vaping has become a huge problem. And again, this is the wildest thing, that tobacco, for years, there was so many initiatives talking about the dangers of tobacco. and, you know, that it causes cancer and how bad it is for you and, you know, the yellow on the fingertips and in the hair. And, you know, people did stop smoking cigarettes and along came vaping. So, you know, cigarettes are still around. People still smoke cigarettes, but vaping is the new thing, and it's nicotine. It's addictive, and a lot of these same companies are making money off of it, and they're making money off a lot of kids. So the most recent coalition having to do with nicotine cessation, Sullivan 180 has been leading it with SALT and the Drug Task Force combined. It's Sullivan County, Vape-Free Sullivan County. We recently talked about bringing youth into the name, Vape-Free Sullivan County Youth, because we also do want the gas stations and the vendors on board with us too. They have kids that live here, and they also have their licenses that they don't want to lose.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, they, it's a business. They are making money off it. But you know what? When somebody's over 18, we can't tell people what to do. We can't force people into rehabs. People have free will. And when they're over 18, they can do what they want, whether or not it's good for them. But kids are a different story. And we're trying to get reduce the access for people under 18. They're not adults yet. They're not allowed to get tattoos. They're not allowed to vote. They shouldn't be able to buy a vape. So that's been the next level. And again, coming back to the mental health. So there's a lot of prevention programs in our schools here in Sullivan County. And they do talk across the board about substance use. And again, it's giving kids tools to process through different traumas and the hard things that life throws us so they don't turn to substances. Because, you know, maybe they're stressed out about a test and a friend tells them, knocking the mic around, and a friend tells them, you know, I have this vape. If you take a puff off this, it'll make you feel better. And you know what? On that first time, maybe it will. But it's also addictive. It becomes a crutch. Not only is the substance addictive, the behavior is addictive.
Right.
To, you know, instead of facing the problem head on and figuring out how to go at it, all right, you're stressed about a test. You know, maybe next time you find a group and you study a week ahead of time. But instead, you're taking that stress and puffing on a vape a couple times, and that becomes a crutch. And that's where in recovery, a lot of times people confuse giving up the substance with changing behaviors. The giving up the substance is the quick and easy part. Once you get the physical withdrawals out, it's the behaviors of cutting corners, quick redirecting out of a bad situation instead of facing a problem head on. And that's the hardest thing to learn. And that's the hardest thing for anybody to face. You know, how many people have a rough day at work and they say, I need a drink.
Changing the behavior also requires constant monitoring, constant
self-awareness.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
And that's something that the literature for AA, NA, other programs similar, there's Refuge Recovery, really talks about meditation and self-awareness and that taking that time alone, quiet to think, to be aware of yourself and your surroundings. That is a major part. And it's something that, you know, some people say it's woo-woo. But so right now I'm in a firefighting course. I'm taking interior firefighting. And that's actually something I don't think one of the instructors realized quite what he was saying, that he said, sometimes I'm in a fire and my heart is racing and I just stop for a second. I close my eyes. He's talking about meditating to bring down his heart rate,
right,
and be able to focus on what's going on around him. And also it saves air consumption. And it's something that can be applied to so many situations that, you know, if we took away, we talk about all sorts of stigma and fighting stigma. Some holistic practices like meditation, there's some stigma against, but they're very helpful. There's a reason there's, you know, religions built around them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting when you mention it, the number of places where one can meditate or learn to meditate or engage in spiritual practice in the Catskills, there are quite a few places.
Yeah.
And that may account for, in an odd way, for the stigma, for sort of the woo-woo, because people going, oh, they're a little bit different. They're
Yeah, the othering.
They're Buddhist. They're odd. Yes, the othering.
Yeah, because, you know, they're coming in with a different way of life, and sometimes that could be scary. But down in Forestburg, the Kadampa Center is a world-renowned meditation center, and they've had a couple pop-ups. I've seen them in Port Jervis and other places, meditation for recovery, and they've tapped into that. And actually, over in Ulster County, I went to visit their center. So I mentioned Refuge Recovery. Have you ever heard of Refuge Recovery?
No.
So with the 12 steps with AA and NA, sometimes people struggle with the spiritual portion.
Yes.
And many times that'll push people away, whether they have traumatic experiences with religion in their past or whatever it may be. So Refuge Recovery is the Buddhist-based 12 steps, and it's more embedded in meditation and self-awareness practices than it is directly saying pray and talk about God. So it's a different angle with the same steps. So it's in Ulster County, they popped up a Refuge Recovery Center up in Kingston. So it's an alternative place to send people for 12-step programs. And I had gone to visit there, and I thought it was great. And we haven't quite gotten there yet here, but some of those resources are available, especially at Kadampa. If anybody's interested, the Kadampa Center down in Forestburg is great. Or it might be in Lumberland. It's down in the south there.
Okay. Yeah. The south.
Yeah.
Who do you report to? Who do you...
So since I've come on in the county, I've been under both Commissioner John Little of Health and Human Services and Deputy Commissioner Melissa Stickle of Health and Human Services, which she also oversees the mental health clinic. So the Department of Community Services is the name for our mental health branch. We have talked about renaming it the Department of Mental Health or Mental Hygiene, because when you say DCS and Department of Community Services, a lot of people don't know what that is, and they don't realize we have those resources here. For anybody that doesn't know, Tuesday and Thursday mornings at Department of Community Services, 20 Community Lane in Liberty, we have open access hours. So people can walk in, and if, you know, if they're having trouble, whatever it may be, they can go talk to somebody and get an assessment and direct them to whatever resources they may need, whether it has to do with substance use or it has to do with some sort of trauma or, you know, sometimes as we get a little older, whether it's over 18 or whatever age, other symptoms develop, whether it might be ADD, adult ADD or OCD. And as our body chemistry changes, it can set alarms off of, you know, what's wrong with me? What am I going through? That's why there's professionals. And
I hear you. I mean, you're talking to somebody who's 79, so I'm aware. And the more I see people in my age group, in my age cohort, sadly, there's some of us that are maybe a bit more forgetful or actually really struggling.
Yeah.
And can use the help.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's why the help is there. And sometimes if people don't want to ask for the help, they'll get a bit worse. Help is there for a reason. And yeah. So anybody out there struggling, if you're not sure what it is, or maybe it's just a little thing, come on by the clinic.
Well, now, not to put you on the spot.
Oh, yeah. No.
Too much. With the what Congress has done or not done, is funding for your work going to be an issue going forward?
I haven't really asked that to anybody. I'm just going to keep doing it until something happens. I know there's been a lot of meetings popping up over what the effects of the Big Beautiful Bill will be.
Right.
And even aside from the Big Beautiful Bill, there's a lot of other things going on. You know, next year will be midterm, so I'm sure things are going to change going into and out of that as well. But as far as I know, I think I am funded in this position for at least a year, and at least until I can get it going. And I don't know. I'm a fixer. And right now this needs fixing. And, you know, a year from now, if we have it up and running, maybe there'll be something else that needs fixing.
Yeah. Well, here we are on a radio station that's defunded but not defeated.
Yeah, I did hear about that. That's awful. And I've always been a supporter of WJFF. Anybody out there that can support you guys, I hope they do. You guys are great to listen to.
Well, this I mean, our talk right now is a perfect example of what public radio can do.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, hopefully out of this discussion, somebody or even some few people will find their way to your door.
I hope so. And it's about, again, the local media. Can I tell you? So I actually didn't go to school for any of this. I went to school for entrepreneurship and business management. And I remember this one case study was about newspapers and the fall of newspapers, how they were all going digital. And this one newspaper that actually stayed successful, what their key was, when they had the choice of different pictures and different stories, they always chose the local one because every other media outlet could give you the national news and whatever from higher up. But this particular newspaper always did the local story. They always had the local pictures and they kept it local. And it was actually one of the few newspapers that thrived. And that's how I feel about WJFF and local radio stations is, you know, anybody can turn on something national and the same story is getting played 50 states, however many media outlets. But this is one of the only places you can hear about things going on specifically in Sullivan County. And I love that.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
How much of your job do you imagine is education?
A lot of it. A lot of it. Sometimes people don't know, one, what resources are there for them and their family members. And if they do know what resources there are, they don't know how to navigate it or how to get to them. And also, so we do a lot of, when we give out Narcan, we give out a lot of test strips. Because sometimes people using substances themselves don't know what's in what they're taking. And sometimes doing the test strips and realizing what's in what they're taking can plant a seed in their mind that, you know, maybe this isn't what I thought it was. And also over time, if they see a change, to see maybe there's a little bit more. Whether the chemistry of it changes, how I said, we're seeing a lot of mixes and while drug dealers and people in the drug game are money smart, there's not a lot of chemists, I would say, as they're breaking down the mass quantities. So they say that with fentanyl and xylazine, one of the dangers is when people are bagging and rebagging, and they call it stepping on it when they put other things in there, they're not measuring each specific bag with each thing they're cutting. They're mixing big batches and then bagging it up that you could have a heavy bag where there's more fentanyl or xylazine than was intended on the bigger mix, and that's when it becomes very dangerous. And that could be, you know, somebody could be using for years, and in the same week they can get 10 different bags of the same thing from the same person, but it's not the same thing. It's different mixes depending on where it came from.
Got it. There's so much to learn. Will you come back again?
Whatever you want, Bill.
Can
absolutely.
Talk? Okay. You've been listening to me talk to Camille O'Brien. Camille is now the Crisis Services Coordinator for the Department of Community Services for Sullivan County. Thank you for joining us, Camille.
Thanks
be sure
for
to join
me.
Us next month for another edition of the Kingfisher Project right here on Radio Catskill.
Big thanks to Bill Williams for doing the Kingfisher Project. Thank you for listening. Do keep on listening on air, always live streaming at WJFFradio.org. This has been the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. I'll be back tomorrow evening to do it all over again. Coming up at 7, we've got Music Emporium with Mr. Kusar Grace. But first, it's The Daily. This is Radio Catskill.
Support comes from Tavern on Main, a neighborhood bar and grill on Main Street in Jeffersonville, featuring local American fare, Saturday and Sunday brunch, and Thursday trivia nights. Menu and hours online at tavernonmainny.com.
The White House asked Congress to pull back federal funding for public media that had already been approved, and Congress has gone along. We want you to know that NPR and this station remain committed to informing the public, increasing your understanding of the world, and hopefully enriching your life in other ways. But without federal funding, we're relying on your support now more than ever. Please make your gift to this station today. Here's how.
Give now at WJFFradio.org. Thank you.
WJFF Jeffersonville Radio.